You are listening to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets associated with the metals. I'm Miles alongside Rob and Tori this week. And together we have about 80 years of experience, if you add it all up, advising on and brokering the precious metals. Each week, the three of us provide a technical analysis of the market charts and cover the underlying fundamentals and news that help move and predict the markets.
Well, Miles, why don't you start us off with how the week has gone?
Yeah, I can definitely do that. It's been a relatively quiet week numbers-wise, but I think there are a couple additional things we can talk about here. So getting into it, we'll kick it off with gold. Gold is down just under 2%, down about 1.8% since our recording last week, currently sitting at $4,450 and sitting pretty stagnant over the last duck. So, and as I mentioned, that's going to be a recurring theme. So we'll just move over to silver. Silver's down 1.5%, currently sitting at $74.60 per ounce. Platinum, similar, down about 1%, back under 2,000. It's at 1,914. Palladium, actually the opposite. Palladium's actually up this week about 1.8%, sitting at 1,390. So making up a little bit of ground against its sister metal, platinum. The equities market also up about 1.5%. It did put in a new all-time high, just peaking above the previous high from a week or so ago. Currently sitting at 7,520 points, and the US dollar is as flat can be, sitting just under 100. It's at 99.20. So pretty quiet week across the board in the metals and equities, and even the US dollar is relatively flat. So Rob, I'm guessing there's not much news out there.
Well, that's not true. Tori, what are you hearing? Because I know Tori's here loaded for bear.
Well, I don't know if I'm loaded for bear, but I mean, there's enough news to fill 10 of these programs. And it's like, who are we? Depends on our identity.
Tori brought his pre-show book that he puts together every week for us.
I am looking at it.
Well, I don't know about that. But honestly, it's how we want to narrow our focus. And as you open the show, Miles, with markets that help predict and move precious metals, that's really where we need to try to focus. You know, interestingly, we did talk last week about Hedgeye, the risk management firm and analyst firm that gets into the deeper dive and the nitty-gritty as to where are we economically. They do try to predict. And Kevin Warsh, the new Fed chair, said that they're going to get away from the forward-looking analysis in a sense, which is a really refreshing statement where let's operate off of reality. They've been completely unable to control for now 5 years the inflation rate, and Americans are feeling it, right? They have a mandate to keep inflation in check. They state that their objective is to have about 2% a year of inflation. We all know it's been far, far north of that. And I say all that to tie it together because from an economic standpoint, Hedgeye would claim that we're in a quad three and into a quad two. So quad three means that GDP is slowing and inflation is accelerating. So you have economic downturn with inflation climbing, but we've kind of transitioned into economic acceleration. Doesn't mean it's fast, but the economy kind of picking up right now with inflation also accelerating. And lo and behold, that's a quad, if you will, that the white metals don't like very much. So if people want to know, well, why are silver, platinum, palladium lagging a little bit? Well, that's why. Well, in a quad two, Miles, you bring up that palladium's up 1.8% this week and everything else is down. Well, that actually holds true over 20 years of looking at quarterly quad data and what the metals do. Palladium likes it. And I'm thinking that it's because it's more inflationary sensitive. As commodity prices have lifted, much like copper and some of the other base metals, palladium and to a little lesser extent platinum, but certainly not silver, like that quad two. Silver actually likes quad one best, which is when inflation is slowing and growth is accelerating. So we have economic activity, but inflation is actually in a decelerating fashion.
Well, then silver is in trouble because it doesn't appear that inflation is going to be decelerating. In fact, it seems the other way. there's a couple of things that I've been picking up on. I know Morgan Lewis over at Wealth Management the other day was talking about the fact that we have to have an off-ramp for all this debt that we have, the debt that's rolling over and the new debt that we're starting. And they're going to probably institute a phase where the banks are going to be required to hold more treasury debt and probably give them a sweetheart deal at the discount window so they can borrow the money to buy the treasuries. And they're just going to be hiding inflation. But that's still going into the economy. So I don't see inflation slowing.
Well, neither does Kevin Warsh, the new Fed chair, in prepared remarks, right? This wasn't like, hey, microphone in your face, off the cuff. In Germany on Friday last week, this is a quote, "I can no longer rule out rate hikes further down the road if inflation does not abate soon. And that is especially true if measures of inflation expectations, some of which have risen lately, show signs of becoming unanchored." And we talked about oil being the ultimate force multiplier in the inflation equation.
Yeah, and I think there's hope for oil coming down.
Well, today is a good example. I mean, it's all based on the optimism from the microphone as to whether or not there's an Iranian deal. And it sounds like the Trump administration, if this deal goes through, is desperate to see a deal go through because the longer these oil prices stay high, the more systemic the impact becomes in the economy. It doesn't matter how healthy your economy is. The inflation will work against it at some point and certainly work against your voter base.
Yeah.
So you've got to get oil prices down. And that news that broke drove oil prices down, and it brought down the other commodities for the most part today. Silver's down, what, like 3% today also?
Yeah.
Oil down 4%. And that's to be expected because a lot of that run-up has been on that speculation of that. But can you imagine raising rates further? I mean, but that is their job, is to control inflation.
Well, the push in Washington has always been to use inflation to stimulate growth. You don't call it inflation, so let's say use the printing presses. But that's that what quad three that you were talking about, which is Washington's best hope, is where you're using fiscal policy to stimulate growth. And oops, you just accidentally also have a little bit of inflation there, but we can finagle that number by changing what actually counts as inflation, which we've certainly done plenty over the last 30, 40 years.
They've done that. But you know, inflation isn't what it costs at the grocery store or how much it cost to put gas in your car. That's just the effect of an expanding money supply.
Right.
Which is inflation.
Which
the
is
money
inflation.
Supply expansion.
Which is inflation. We've just redefined it to confuse people. It's not called quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is a made up term. We make terms up to confuse people.
They're going
to
expand
the balance
sheet.
I make terms up to sound smart.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm talking about. If I'm confusing everybody.
But look, I mean, they're going to expand the money supply. They're going to expand the Fed balance sheet. They're going to stuff treasuries into banking coffers, telling you need to raise your liquidity. Here's how you're going to do it. But as long as you can drive your car and put food on the table reasonably, you know, people don't feel it. It's the felt need of lower costs, but in reality, we're headed towards inflation.
Well, and that's why our ideal, Miles, you talk about the government's ideal. They do have to be careful with aggressive inflation, because that's another thing that Morgan Lewis talked about, is the debt service. If you allow inflation to remain too high for too long, that impacts the government and the ability for the government to pay its debts, much less the rest of America, which means discretionary spending drops, which means eventually it catches up and the economy slows and you get into that quad three because inflation's getting too much and the economy starts to slow. But what we want to see is growth accelerating and inflation slowing. You know, as consumers and spenders, that's the ideal. We don't want to see a quad four where inflation is slowing, but so is GDP, because that's layoffs and economic stagflation in another fashion. So they're excellent models, and it's a good exercise to kind of walk through. And when you're in a quad one, that's actually when the metals do best. So if we can look ahead and hope to predict when we might get into a quad one, first and foremost, we need an agreement in the Middle East.
Yeah.
We need oil prices to come down. We're not talking about deflation, where things actually start to get significantly cheaper. We're talking about inflation slowing closer to that 2% target, where we're far less sensitive to it. Like that, we're numb to. The issue becomes strong dollar versus weak dollar. also. If we have a weak dollar, it boosts our manufacturing, mm-hmm. like it's the reindustrialization of America. We can export cheaper goods. Trump wants to revitalize that, and he wants a weaker dollar, and he wants to stimulate the stock market because a weaker dollar kind of does that too. The stock market has to adjust, and he uses it as a barometer of economic health, which it's not. No different than if gold's spiking, that's not a barometer of economic health.
But it's a barometer when the Republicans are in power, but not when the Democrats are.
Yes, that's right. So they both use it to their advantage. Like, well, just look at the stock market. It's everything's great. Well, not true. If you do see the dollar turn down, that's likely going to be rate cuts that are corresponding to that. And we know that they've wanted rate cuts. But here's Warsh saying the rate hikes may be necessary again. So hawkish, that's economically stagnating in many instances, but it will keep inflation in check if it starts to run away or become unanchored, as he said.
Yeah, but I think the Fed is in a corner. This Fed raises rates or the Fed lower rates, that mechanism has been overused. I just don't think it's as effective as it used to be.
Yeah, but weaker dollar policy is just trickle-down economics in a different hat. You know, we're talking about weaker dollar policy, which is increased inflation, therefore more money in circulation, less value to the money that's in circulation. That money goes into circulation from the top down, and the assumption is it makes its way down into the general public, but what we found over the last 20 years is it doesn't. It kind of stops at the upper banking level and gets diversified out into their portfolios for their gain. And we know that when you bring into the discussion the idea of velocity of money, mm-hmm. the turnover, how many times is a US dollar exchanging hands? And the velocity of money has been on the floor for a long time.
Long time.
So what's happening is a push towards a weaker dollar policy starting from the top down, that money isn't making its way down to the general public, but the general public's gas prices have also gone up to $4.50, $5 a gallon. And like you were saying a second ago, if we don't get the oil prices down, that materializes itself everywhere. And every good or service that requires transportation is now becomes more expensive. So you've got the general public who are not feeling the benefits of the weaker dollar policy. Ergo, now you have slowing growth. So I don't know how we get into a point now where we get to have the benefit from both sides. You know, you can only pump nitrous into the gas tanks for so long until the engine ends up blowing. And it's starting to feel like the engine's about to blow.
Well, and right now, rate cuts and rate hikes are not as predictable, Rob. I mean, I think you're nailing it. It's that lever is broken. And they've got to find other tools, and that really is the money supply. And it's the Fed buying the debt. That's going to be the engine mm-hmm. that is the yield curve control, where you're not letting bond yields get out of control because the Federal Reserve's just going to buy it. That's another form of printing. Like, imagine you're needing to sell debt, and out of the other hand, you buy your own debt, in a sense. That's what the Federal Reserve is doing for the U.S. Treasury. And that's that balance sheet. That's the boosting the money supply, even if it doesn't trickle into the banks. That doesn't mean that the banks are suddenly able to lend that much more. But it's not a healthy bond market. But that can be far more effective than what we see going on with rate cuts and rate hikes, mm-hmm. which have not played out here in the last few years to be as effective as what they used to be. Are there going to be some other arrows in the quiver that we don't know about? I don't know. But a lot of this, again, is predicated on the fact that we need geopolitical tensions to ease. Yeah. We need military spending to ease and activity to ease and get more of a focus on the domestic economy. And maybe that's going to happen here in the next couple of days. Rubio said it's going to be a slow process and take many days. Well, it has been. Mm-hmm. Again, nothing has changed yet other than what they're saying. And Iran has proven to be masterful at buying time and negotiating slowly. And it's not just in this round of negotiations. That's their history. This isn't art of the deal that Donald Trump is used to doing. This is a completely different way of negotiating and patiently waiting things out. And they've gotten a lot of leverage as a result of dragging things out.
And the bottom line is, how is this going to affect the metals? What's going to happen to the direction and the momentum? You know, momentum is key. I think the momentum for gold is going to be fine. I'm a little bit worried about silver. I want so much for silver to do what some of the prognosticators are predicting. I don't know if it can, but I know gold's going to be, you know, fine. I mean, we should be around 5,000, 5,500 within the next 6 months. I have no problem with that.
To their credit, those prognosticators or analysts or predictors didn't know the war was going to happen, in a sense. You didn't know you were going to have oil spike to the moon.
Right.
And if this gets eased, then maybe that trend continues. This was a slight pause or interruption into that, you know, and Miles has worked up those charts here and, you know, where do we need to break out from and all that. But I'm with you. Like, I think we should look a little bit at the gold-silver ratio because, Miles, you were saying this earlier. You're not a silver bug or really a price-focused broker advisor. You're ratio-focused.
And where the ratio right now is where it's been for decades. We're at about 60 to 1. That's been the average ratio for decades.
Well, it depends on how far back we go. So it's 67 to 1 for 30 years. In the last 10 years, it's 80.7. So it depends on how far back you go. But the ratio used to be 16 to 1.
Yeah, 100 years ago.
Yeah. It's this rising channel, which I think is kind of worth showing, and why we have to be informed and educated by the ratio as far as informing and educating our clients as to what to buy and in what quantity or percentage of the portfolio. How much gold versus how much silver? Are we swapping gold for silver or silver for gold? And why are we doing those directions? And are we just outright selling and doing silver for silver's sake? So Miles, I want you to weigh in on this and I'll pull in some longer term ratios that help advise the clients as well.
Yeah, I think taking a look at the longer term ratio helps put it in context. One thing I think is important to remember is, sure, gold and silver were 16, 17 to 1, but they were fixed at that rate by a government using them as currency. I'm assuming based on expected mining positions back in the 17, 1800s, but they were fixed at that rate for a very long time because of the currency position. So we're in a new paradigm now for the last 40 years where precious metals, or specifically gold and silver, have been allowed to float based on just whatever's going on in the market. And what we've clearly seen over the last 40 years is gold is, over time, trending more valuable than silver. The highs are getting higher. The lows are also getting higher. And you can see how this chart is tilted when you take a look at it and climbing. That means gold is becoming more valuable than silver, at least over the last 40 years. So I think where I start to get kind of stuck in communication with people on this, and this isn't for my personal clients that listen to the show. I'm not talking about you guys. We've had some great conversations. And believe me, I've got a lot of my clients sitting there going, okay, I've got my target points. This is where I'm going to do my ratio trades. I've got two or three or four positions. If and when silver continues to outperform gold into the near future, we know where our step out points are. And I've got some clients that took advantage of it in January, February, and we're just waiting for the next rotation and the next rotation. So I think where I start to get hung up, and we were talking about this earlier, is I'm thinking back to like 2011 when silver hit 49 and change, and everybody across the board was waiting for silver to go to 100. And it did. It took 14 years, 15 years. Yeah. But it did.
In January of 2026.
those of you sitting on your silver position, because now we're looking at gold silver ratio trades, you really need to be stepping your position down. Frankly, some of you now. Under 60 to 1.
Yeah.
Because as Tori and Rob just mentioned, we're below the halfway point. And if you're sitting on a 60, 70, 80% silver position, it's worth considering going ahead and stepping out of a percentage of it now. You certainly should step out of some of it if we do push back into the 40s.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where we're at now. This is the trend of gold versus silver over the last 40 years is rising. The bottom may be higher than you think it's going to be, because the last bottom was higher than the previous one and vice versa all the way down the line. So I'm going back to 2011, looking at clients at 31 to 1 who were like, nope, it's going to 16. It's going to 16 again. It's going to 16. I'm not swapping it out. Well, they're still waiting for 16.
I heard that in January. Yeah,
and that's my point.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. They could be right.
Yeah. I hope they are.
Great. But you could also be wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Yeah, because you could also be wrong. And that's where I start to get frustrated with a lot of the prognosticators is there's no wiggle room for incorrect information. And oftentimes when things don't work out the way that the crystal ball says you will, you write it off to, oh, well, this happened, or we attacked Iran, or the Strait of Hormuz, or, you know, there's always a reason. It's like, well, you can plan for those reasons that you don't know are going to happen ahead of time. Like, you can go ahead and have a position in place ahead of time so that you know, regardless of what's going on in the world around you. And this is why I always make the joke about how the charts don't lie. And you can't control news, but it is always fascinating to me that the charts tell us what's going to happen and the price ranges it's going to happen in. And then all of a sudden, some news event pops up out of nowhere that takes the chart exactly to where it was going to go anyway before it turns around. Because I'm right there with you. As all of you who listen to the show know, I've already swapped most of my silver. I did it in the 50s and 60s because I bought most of it over 100. I've got tons of clients who picked up some over 100, picked up some in the 90s. We already did some in the 50s, and a couple of people, we even got to do some in the 40s.
You're talking ratio, not prices, too.
I'm talking the ratio, correct. Right.
Well, that's the paradigm price. Shift, is we don't focus on price. Price can help
us. Couldn't care less.
I mean, here we started the show focused on price, right? So obviously, we look at price. We look at the charts. Yeah. And that determines performance, direction, all of that. It also helps us with entry and exit points. So if somebody's looking to sell, we're going to sell on a spike, hopefully, and ideally up at a resistance level in the trend.
But if you can take a 20 to 25% gain in ounces coming out of silver into gold from where you started, of course, that's not as exciting as it was a few months ago when you were gaining 50, 60, 70% more ounces. We may not get there, but take the win. If you can begin gradually moving out at a 25 or 35 or 45% gain in ounces and still have a significant chunk left behind, take the win.
That's right. And let it be a logical percentage of the portfolio. Very rarely are you going to see an instance where you should swing the pendulum 100% towards one metal. During COVID, when the ratio was 125 to 1, yeah, all-time high, pretty reasonable to sell all of your gold and buy all silver. And lo and behold, 8 months later, you'd have come back to 50% more ounces of gold. Wow. It only took 8 months. Well, same thing here. We saw 47 to 1 on the ratio in January. That's not low enough. As Miles described, we were 31 to 1 in 2011. That's an outlier event now, historically.
Yeah.
Definitely worth selling all of your silver and going 100% gold. Because it's going to go back up to 80.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with predicting the price movement of silver and gold. They could both shoot to the moon. It's one outperforming the other. Mm-hmm. It's the percentage gain difference. That's where our ounce gains come from. And that's why, Rob, you're exactly right. Take the win. And you can do it in stages. David and Kevin talk on the weekly commentary about having a plan. Do you come out in three stages? Do you come out in five stages? Do you not care and you just come out and one stage and leave 20% of your silver alone? You know, there's a lot of ways to approach it, but you've got to have a co-pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And I would strongly recommend that you call your advisor
here
at McIlvaney.
Because we're pretty good co-pilots.
Yeah, and walk through it with us. Like, just, hey, what's my situation? Where are my entry ratios?
Yeah.
Where are my exit ratios? And in what percentages? And if you haven't had that conversation, you've got to have it. That's where the ounce gain and accumulation and compounding strategies come into play.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, so before we close it up, guys, I do want to point out a couple quick chart things. We are looking at a pretty solid floor in gold that we put in back at the bottom down at the end of March at around 4,400. We touched that today. We touched into this trading zone, which is between about like 43.75 and 44.50. So we'll definitely want to keep an eye on gold. We did have a long tail, a single day decline when gold put in that second bottom on March 23rd. But we're right in the bottom end of that gold trading range. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have a much more chart heavy discussion over the next week as we move into this range and see what kind of momentum gold's going to pick up from there. silver, slightly different than gold, is right in the middle of its trading range. So even though we're showing a little bit of weakness, silver is actually at the bottom of kind of a little interim rising channel here. So I think there's still a chance we may get another shot at sub 50 coming up here. So if you haven't done anything yet, it may be worth taking a bite here in the mid 50s as we are. If you have done something or looking at a bigger position, I haven't given up yet, looking at how the ratio has been trading and how the both the metals are trading, that we could see something sub 50 that's going to give us an opportunity to take another stab at it. And then we'll certainly readdress from there. So I think that's going to do it this week, fellas. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. If you liked what you heard, we encourage you to head on over to our website to find more information. We're at McElvaney.com. That's McElvaney.com. And as always, if you'd like to discuss your personal portfolio with one of the advisors here at McElvaney Precious Metals, you can reach us at 1-800-525-9556. Thanks again for listening and have a great week.